listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, we got a fun episode of CarCast today. Our friend Alistair Weaver from Edmunds is in the studio. Before we get started, let me tell you a little bit about Dodge. Visit your local Dodge dealer where they bring you power, performance, and great deals. There's never been a better time now because Dodge is offering Power Dollars. With Power Dollars, you'll get $10 off each horsepower of your new car. Every 2019 Dodge Charger, every 2019 Challenger. That means you can pull away in a 2019 Dodge Charger RT Scat Pack with 485 horsepower and receive an almost $5,000 cash allowance. So you get more power and get more off. It's that simple. So hurry into your local Dodge dealer today and take advantage of Dodge Power Dollars. All right, let's do it. Hey, welcome to CarCast. I am Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea. Our buddy Bill Goldberg is on set filming NCIS Los Angeles today. However, we've got our BFF in the car world, Alistair Weaver from Edmunds.com here in the studio. How are you?
Your BFF. I like that. I'm good, thanks.
You're our car guy BFF. Alistair Weaver is the editor-in-chief of Edmunds.com. You've seen him in the videos. You've heard him on the show. You can follow him on Twitter. He's Alistair Weaver on Twitter, and he's Weevometer on Instagram. We'll hit that again later. Before we get started, let me tell you a little bit about Dodge with Dodge Power Dollars. For every horsepower of your new Dodge vehicle purchase, you'll get $10 off. So peeling out in a Dodge and a 2019 Dodge Charger RT Scat Pack, you'll get $4,580 off. Big horsepower. Good to see you again. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. How are you?
Good. Just got back from Arizona Auction Week. Is it Scottsdale Auction Week? I don't know what the actual term is, like Monterey Auction yeah. Week or Monterey Car Week or not, but a bunch of auctions going on out there. I don't hit up all of them. There's some new one out there. There's Russo and Steele. There's Bonhams. I usually hit up R.M. Sotheby's,
yeah.
Gooding and Company, and Barrett Jackson. It's great to see the cars, and it's also just a big social thing as well. So we'll touch a little bit on that. But one of the things I noticed while I was out there, you and I were just chatting a second ago, and probably pretty good lead into some of the emails and news you're reading about in front of you as we speak, was a lot of the exotic cars, not a lot, some of the exotic cars and a lot of the classic vintage cars that we talk about on this show all the time, especially the show with Adam Carolla, didn't do as well as they had done in the year. Now, Monterey this past year, the auctions took a hit, about a 30% hit.
Yeah, it was a disaster, wasn't it?
In the collector car market, yeah. And an example, a car that we both like, is the Porsche 911 Turbo, the air-cooled, the 993, the last of the 911.
You mean the 993 that I own?
Yeah.
Not the Turbo.
Yeah, not the Turbo. But just before you bought yours, the Turbos were in the $180,000 to $200,000 range. And I saw a gorgeous black-on-black 911 Turbo, 993 Turbo, go at Gooding. I think it was a no-reserve car, and don't quote me on it. I think the hammer price was somewhere around $136,000, so maybe it's $150,000 all in.
Yeah, it's still a hell of a lot of money. I mean, I bought my original 993 in the UK probably about 10 years ago now. I paid 25 sterling, so what's that? Just over $30,000 at today's money. And that doubled in value, and eventually when I moved to the US, I sold it there and then bought the same car over here because I loved it. Still do. But I think it's a bit like when you buy property, you just imagine the market has been so strong for so long that you just imagine it keeps going up and up and up. But as somebody whose London house has gone down in value recently and everything else, you have to realize that that's not always going to be the case.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe the market's having a correction and there's lots of people suddenly getting their fingers burnt.
Well, I don't mean to pick on your people, but British cars don't hold their value that well, and
that's German.
Yeah, well, I know it is, but maybe. Some of the cars that I was surprised about, where, for example, McLaren. Now,
yeah.
For a long time, the British cars, even the classic cars weren't really bringing up their value. You know, there's the E-Type and things like that. But it wasn't until like Jaguar started getting, you know, some of their really expensive Le Mans, you know, racing cars in, and then they started pulling $15 million. But for, you know, for the longest time, it's just like you're buying Rolls Royce, you're buying Bentleys, you're buying McLarens, you know, you're spending $300,000-$400,000 on a bespoke Rolls Royce, and then, you know, 18 months later you could buy it for, you know, $150,000. And the big surprise to me was I get all of these car companies, they try to do special edition cars to make that car retain its value. It's probably a little bit more profitable for them, and it's a great PR thing, but really it has a lot to do with creating some value for that car. I mean, you know, Ferrari has a few of theirs as well, and those always seem to do well. And Porsche, by God, I don't know how many. They really milk the 911 platform, right? Like,
they do, but I think they've done it. I mean, they have lots of various. They're not big on. I mean, they have the speedsters and stuff, but generally they have a pattern. And with Porsche, what you don't, you only see very rarely like paint jobs and that sort of thing. I mean, there was the
911T, and then there's 911 Turbo exclusive, the gold
one. Yeah, where
one,
you keep going and going.
Yeah. So there's a few of those. And by the way, I saw one of those sell at Gooding as well, and they were still getting pretty decent money for them, you know. But two McLaren Sennas came up, and I believe one of them was at Gooding, and it did have a reserve. It got a high bid of $1 million and didn't sell. People were buying them for $1 million when they were new. And not only that, they probably had to have a history with McLaren and had to be on a list or fill out an application or like go through that process, right? Another one, which is no reserve at Barrett-Jackson, it got to like 836 and it sold because it's no reserve. I know the guy who bought it and he's just like, I had to get it. He's going to end up selling it. He owns a dealer. He's going to end up selling it. But he's just going to bring it home, put it in a showroom. If it sits there for 18 months, it's going to sit there for 18 months.
I hope it goes back up.
Yeah,
it's an interesting thing. If you'd said to me, you know, a couple of years back when they said, I mean, it's a McLaren with the Senna name, you know, tiny, tiny numbers, race car off the road. There's so much buzz around it. If you'd said, like, where's a solid place to put $1 million, you'd have said that was a pretty good bet.
I'm telling you, like, the idea of waiting to be on that list, being selected a la Ferrari, right? If you look at LaFerrari, look at Enzo, if you were selected to buy one of those at essentially sticker price, because that's how Ferrari does it, sure, Ferrari sends you the letter and says, hey, congratulations, we're going to take $1.5 million of your money for a LaFerrari. But the guy writing that check goes, sweet. Free money, because he knows that's going to be a $2 million car as soon as his contract is up and he's allowed to sell it if he chooses to sell it.
Yeah, which was like the whole thing with the Ford GT as well. Mm-hmm. But actually, I was looking at that saying, well, you know, if you can find the money and you can get on the list, does this make sense? But yeah, sooner or later, people get their fingers burned. I think one of the interesting things, McLaren has done a lot of these recently. And actually, as we're sitting on here next week, I'm off to the launch of the Elva here in L.A., and you've got, I think as a brand, you've got to be careful. These things have got to be special. And Ferrari's falling into this trap as well. If you just do too many, then the special edition ceases to be special.
Yeah.
And we all remember kind of our generation, you know, growing up with 959s and F40s and things like that. But they were a once-a-decade car. And now in this world, everyone wants everything bespoke and what have you. These cars are tripping over every month, every you know, it feels.
And Lamborghini does quite a few
as
well.
Exactly. And so they just cease to be as special. And maybe also, you know, the world's changing a bit and people are looking around saying, you know, it's all about perception as well, isn't it?
I guess so. But listen, when you talk about Ford GT, this was a big moment in the car auction history in regards to the Ford GT owners. Because everybody that bought one, that filled out that application, we went through this whole John Cena debacle with him selling it. Buying the Ford GT, you had a 2-year contract. And the first allocation of cars from 2017, the contract is up. And now every auction out there had a Ford GT, right? I think Barrett-Jackson had two of them, Gooding, RM. Everybody had a Ford GT. people were buying these cars for what, between $500,000 and $600,000,
yeah.
maybe in the 550 range with a few options, and the carbon package is 580, 590, somewhere in that range. The estimates for these cars were 750 to a million. That's what they thought they're going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
They were hammering for 1.1, 1.2, 1.3. They're almost doubling the estimates, all in with the fees. Anybody that was looking to sell their Ford GT made out good.
It's funny, isn't it? American cars seem to be doing well. And, you know, Porsches will always be Porsche. But a lot of it, I think, is also to do with – I was talking to Audi many years ago, and they realized with the original Quattro, the early 80s car, which all the rally success and everything else, they never really supported that car. So Porsche's always been very good at continuing to manufacture parts and having the stock, and Audi just hasn't. And Lotus as well never really supported the old cars in the way that they might have done, and that's just hammering values. And yeah, it's an interesting world right now.
Yeah.
And
there was a 91 Lotus Elan convertible at RM.
Front-wheel drive one.
Yeah, the front-wheel drive with the Isuzu engine.
Yeah.
Okay, this was blue. That was
so cool back in the day.
I had one.
Did you?
Yeah, so I had one. And it wasn't that good, but it was fun, and it was quick, and it handled great. But it was fidgety for sure, and it had, I don't know, just something about the interior. Like, the interior would always fall apart, just wear through on the seats and things like that. It wasn't that great, but but it was a lot of fun to drive.
That at the time was the front wheel drive.
It was the front wheel drive
alternative, and then of course the Elise came along.
Yeah.
A few years later.
But RM had this blue one that was nice and very low miles, like 450 miles or something on it. And it was a great color combination on it. And the interior was perfect. The thing was perfect in every way. And, you know, it got, I don't know, $40,000, which is, I still think, kind of high. But I guess with those miles, and you know, there's been quite a few of that at the auctions recently, the really low mile cars, the 93 Cobras that sold for 120 something, 143, the Cobra R's. But one had 330 miles, the other had like 30 something miles on it. And I like the 93. I like the Cobra R model, but I wouldn't mind like taking it out on the weekend or doing like a Cars and Coffee. Cars and Brunch, I don't like to get up that early. But but taking it out to something like that. But if it's got 36 miles on it, you can't.
No.
You know, if you buy it, it's still wrapped in plastic. You got to keep it wrapped in plastic. I'm just not there yet. I'm not that museum car guy yet.
No, I don't ever want to be that guy.
And it was the
same way even when I got the 993, was there were cars with 30,000 miles on them. And A, they're a lot more expensive and I didn't want to spend the money, but also I didn't have the money to spend. But actually, I just want to be able to go out and enjoy it and not think, oh, if I take it a Monterey, oh, that's just knocked $3,000 off the value.
Yeah.
It's funny, I was in a Mercedes dealer over the weekend, so I was fiddling with my phone, Matt, just because I want to bring up this picture. They had a GTR, which is the AMG GTR. That's the one with all the silly wings based on the GT3 race car, the Mercedes AMG.
So the GT is the two-door sports car, not the four-door coupe
style one. This is a two-door coupe.
What do they call the four-door version?
The AMG GT.
AMG GT.
Yeah.
They don't call it a four-door? Because they have the coupe. They have the two-door.
Yeah, which is just the GT.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know I should know this. They've got so much going on at the moment.
Yeah.
The GT sedan is the four-door, which looks a bit like the CLS, but isn't a CLS.
Yeah, I get it.
Like
all right, so you went to look at the sports car.
Don't ruin my anecdote.
Okay.
So I happened to be in a Mercedes dealership looking at something completely different. They had a GTR there, which is basically based on the GT3 race car, sort of Kermit green with wings and all sorts of carbon fiber. MSRP 225.
Yeah.
It said a little sticker here. I mean, they haven't even bothered to print it out properly. Plus market adjustment, 100K.
Oh, my gosh.
325, 640 to drive away. I was thinking, who's going to buy that?
I just don't even get me fired up on the goddamn dealer markups.
I just looked at that and I just thought, this is nuts. And I know you've been driving around in a Supra and there's some heavy markups on early Supra, but if you bought a Supra with a heavy markup on it in the early days,
you're going to get kicked right in the beanbag because I'm telling you, don't pay those markups. Don't pay those markups.
Can I do a neat segue of my own?
Yes.
Because we've just been driving the new GT500 and we have one on its way that we're picking up super soon. I think we can talk about that next time because the car's basically arrived. We just got to go and pick it up. But we've just done a drag race with the GT500, the ZL1 and the wide body Hellcat. And, you know, GT500, another one, which will probably be a lot of it going over sticker. Yeah. So basically, we had every vehicle in the fastest spec as you can possibly get it. So a ZL1 1LE Camaro, a Dodge Challenger Hellcat Red Eye wide body. Try putting that on Twitter. And then the GT500 with the carbon pack with everything on it. The car we're buying hasn't got the carbon pack on it.
The ZL1 was the automatic?
Yeah, they're all auto.
They're all
apart from the GT500 is that double clutch,
right,
sort of auto.
But they're all essentially auto or have an auto mode.
Yeah,
and launch
control. They're American, right?
So. Yeah, and launch control.
Yeah. So when we did we launched a drag race film, which I suspect many people listening have actually seen because we got 1.3 million views in 4 days, which is just crazy.
I'm like four of those views.
I am.
Because I watched it several times and I kept getting into it.
Yeah. And we have on Thursday, we were actually launching the triple test. So we did a huge thing with these. So we took them all down our test track. We ran all the figures on them. We then took them out to a proving ground in Mojave and then did a drag race, but have also done a thorough test. The film's about 30-odd minutes, so it's basically a TV show on YouTube.
When you're comparing the three cars like that together, you've already tested a Red Eye and a ZL1. When you take it out to your test track, do you do it again just to get them all in the same... same day, same temperature, or how much do you pull from the archives on previous testing versus getting all three cars out there again?
We generally like to get them all together because also, you know, there's also so many variants of these things. Is it a Hellcat, but is it a wide body? Is it a Red Eye, etc.? So we try and get them all together. We can, with every testing that we do a correction for things like, well, we can correct in the figures to make sure that everything is apples to apples. And we even do things like think about what time of day and manage for temperature. And so there's a lot of science goes into it. And we always, you know, make sure the full tanks, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot go into it. And then so that when we have the figures and... there's a lot of bravado in our industry about, we've got, you know, you talk to the road and track guys, we did it in 3.1 or we were 3.15. But actually what we're trying to say is because we're trying to park the egos is actually say this is apples for apples. So this is in, you know, the same conditions with the same fuel loads and everything else.
Right. You don't need to be the site or the book or whatever who goes fastest in a GT500.
We know that. We don't need to.
Gotcha. All right.
I know in my heart that I'm talented.
Yeah, he knows he's going to be the fastest. It's just either way.
I'm so fast, I didn't even do it myself.
Yeah, that's right. You got a team of people do it. So tell us a little bit about the different variations of the cars if you have it in front of you. Like what do the cars weigh?
So this is actually the critical thing because if you without wishing to give the film away, the GT500 wins.
The drag race video. We can get into the other video that you've been teasing. The full test video. Yeah, but yeah, GT500 not only just wins, by the way. It demolishes.
I wish Bill was on the phone because it just kills the wide body in a big way. And then the Chevy
as
well.
His is 1,000 horsepower. So.
Well, actually, this is. I know he's not here, but we really want to get Bill to do it. We need like a round two with Bill's car.
Yeah, you really do. Then we got to get Leah Pritchett out there, Pruitt. I changed her name back to Pruitt. Get her out there to drive it for him.
Yeah,
drag race it for him. That's a little bit of a ringer episode, but sure.
I think that would be great. And one of the things that we did do is run launch control in all of them to basically level the playing fields and say, okay, this is fair because. They're so traction limited, these cars. I mean, they're traction limited in second and third gear. So, and we had to warm the tires up, and the Camaro was on super sticky tires, and so there's a lot of management of that. But if you just look at the mass, and this is, I think, you know, everybody talks about muscle cars, but this is the thing you've really got to look at. The Camaro weighs 3,892 pounds, and these are off our scales. This is not manufacturer figures.
When you weigh them, it's what? How much fuel is in the car?
That's full of fuel.
So full tanks.
Yeah, full tanks.
Yeah, no driver.
Yeah, it's not like where you get OEMs that sort of strip everything out. So it's an unreal figure. So it's full tanks, no driver. The Hellcat. Well, actually, let me see. So 3,892 for the Chevy. 4,058 pounds, the GT500. How much do you think a Hellcat is?
Okay, so there's about 60 pounds difference between the
Camaro? There's 100 pounds, 100 and a little bit more than that, 150, 170.
Oh, 150 pounds.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a 3,892
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's about 150 pounds between the two. And then the Red Eye, I'm going to say, is a little more portly.
A little more portly.
I'm going to say 42.
No, it's 45.27.
Oh my gosh!
So it just that, and so when you then look at the pounds per horsepower, the Camaro comes out at 6.0, 5.7 for the Hellcat because it's got more power. But
yeah,
it's got, you know, that one has got 797. So 797 horsepower for the Hellcat, 650 for the Camaro, 760. I mean, they're all insane figures. 760 for the GT500. But when you translate that into the all important power to weight, pounds per horsepower, 6 for the Chevy, 5.7 for the Fat Boy, and 5.3 for the GT500. And then when you put that onto the track, 0 to 60, which is super traction limited, GT500 fastest at 3.8, wide body at 4.2, and then on the quarter mile, GT500 11.3 at 130.7. And then the wide boy, although the power's now helping you, it's still at 11.7, 127. So
yeah,
that big difference on the mass makes such a huge difference.
Wow. It's amazing.
And then on the lateral G as well, on the skid pad, the Camaro was on super sticky tires, 1.21 G, GT500 1.17, and then 1.1 G for the Hellcat. I mean, they're all...
When you start getting into the 1G versus the 1.1G,
yeah,
these are finite numbers, and they make all the difference when you're reading it. Who feels that?
I think, yeah. I mean, you've got a fairly honed backside
if you said 0.9 versus 1.1, there could be some noticeable difference in a performance environment, on a track or something. But if you're saying 1... versus 1.1 or 1.05 versus 1.11. It's like, eh.
Well, it's also what are these cars about? Because in the olden days, it was just about going fast in a straight line.
Yeah.
But actually, 1.2G is a serious performance.
That's serious. And by the way, you can probably alter that with just, I don't know, potentially tire pressure change.
Yeah, and tires themselves, depending on whether you go for the track day specials and that sort of thing. We actually on this triple car test, we took them out of the proving ground. We do lap times in them, which is really interesting. And we also do a burnout test, which is not very empirical but quite fun.
Yeah.
without giving it away, the wide body just absolutely rinses that compared with
everybody
else.
I'm sure
that expression rinses that. Yeah, it wins. And Alana Cher was driving the Hellcat, and basically she stopped, and this thing was just going and going and going.
Yeah.
So it's all about what you want, because the GT500 is not. It is a muscle car, because clearly it's got over 750 horsepower, but it's a proper sports car. And I think Ford's done a really good job with that.
Okay. Proper sports car. I agree with it. It's more muscle than sports car because the reason why I'm saying that is because I just picked up, I've only been driving it for a day. I got the Toyota Supra.
Yeah.
And it's small and feels like a sports car. And then, you know, coming from the auctions and stuff and looking around at a lot of the old cars that have been going up on the block, I look at the size of my Fox Body Mustangs. I even look at the size of my truck, my 95 Lightning. And then I look at the new vehicles and the Dodge, even the Camaro, even the Mustang, they're huge.
They are huge.
They're huge by comparison.
But look at the new 911. We're talking about 993s and some of the air cool stuff. They're tiny. You put the new 992, the 992 is huge. And every generation, it gets that little bit wider, that little bit longer.
Yeah. I don't know why it's doing that.
a lot of it's safety stuff, to be honest.
Yeah, there's a lot of electronics and things that are going in there, and you're right. There's some safety components to it, and I guess they're saying, hey, if we have to fit this and this and this in there, we might as well take advantage of the larger bodywork and, you know, widen the track and maybe extend the wheelbase and makes it a little bit smoother ride and like makes a little bit better handling, or put a little more tire underneath it.
And people. not in all cases, but people are generally getting bigger.
That's right. We've got fat people here and as well. We've got quite a few.
And if you go back, you know, I just fit in my car.
Yeah,
that's in the 90s. But yeah.
I fit in everything, although I did hit my head getting into the Supra this morning.
But that's one thing I like about the Supra is that it's small and actually it feels agile. And a car I drove last week, which we had in the office, was a Honda Civic Si. And that was a little stick shift, you know, hatchback coupe. You know, the ride quality is pretty stiff, but it was so nice to drive something that wasn't that fast. A really nice gearbox, and it just felt, you know, and actually driving it home on normal roads, you could have a bit of fun with it.
Yeah.
I drive so much stuff now, which is big, heavy, crazy fast, but you can't really enjoy in the same way.
You know, we've been testing so many SUVs the past few months because they're so popular and everybody's into them. We get a lot of questions on the high-end ones. Do I buy the Lincoln? Do I buy the Cadillac? Or do I buy the Honda CR-V or the Toyota RAV4? It was nice getting into a proper sports car for once. I mean, you know, it's got the automatic transmission and stuff in it, but it makes good sounds.
Yeah.
The 8-speed transmission seems to be shifting in the right places. It scoots around pretty good. It seems fun. It seems like a fun little car. I haven't really got a chance to open it up, just trying to dodge some traffic on my way in this morning, but it is nice. Now, the one thing you do realize right away, you get into the sports car, you're like, where's my giant 12.5-inch screen? Where's my split screen with CarPlay?
Where's the baby go?
And I was like, it wouldn't fit. You'd have to take out the passenger seat just to put a screen in there. But you realize some of these vehicles, the Ram truck and the Tesla and new Lincoln Navigators and you know, the screens and stuff in these things, you're like, they wouldn't even fit. There's no way it would fit in
the new Suburban.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think it's – am I right in thinking this is the 12th generation Suburban? It's basically been around for about 90 years.
Yeah.
Based on the Silverado, but it's got bigger again.
And, it's bigger.
And like I think the interior volume, if you drop the seats, is getting like 200 square feet or something. That's like – there's apartments in London that are smaller than that.
Yeah, there's
– that's a hotel room.
There's places out here that are about 200 square feet.
And about $1 million.
Yeah. I was I got in the car and I was driving it and I got up next to a Ford Ranger, the four-door four-wheel drive version. So it was like a little bit lifted, had a little bit better tire. And it was a nice blue. And I'm looking at him like, all of a sudden, the Ranger looks big to me while driving the Supra. And then I was thinking, oh, well, I have a truck. And I was like, I don't think it's as big as a Ranger, as a crew cab Ranger. I mean, you know, his bed's shorter. My bed's a little bit longer. But maybe my truck feels wider than that. But it's tough to tell because they're sort of kind of rounded and stuff. No,
it's surprising how vulnerable you feel now as well in some Supras. Like when I came over, I had this romantic image of getting a Morgan three-wheeler as the kind of eccentric Brit. And I'm like,
yeah,
and I test drove one. It's like, I'm going to die. This is like worse than a motorbike.
Yeah, don't do that.
Nobody's ever going to see me, and I'm just going to be squished at the first right turn. But
the Morgan's a pretty car, but
it's a very cool thing.
But wait till you get run over by a Suburban in that thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not going to survive.
Exactly.
It's all bad news. Did you guys hear about some news from CES? Do you have much? I know CES isn't coming into the new year, CES is always kind of weird timing for me. I'm not able to always go. And as much as I love technology, I do see all the cool things. I'm like, oh, this everything's a smart whatever now. And your refrigerator can talk to your TV and it can talk to your toilet and it can talk to your shower. And I was like, it's a lot of talking involved, but it's starting to turn into a little bit of the January car show, right? There's a lot of technology coming up, and I don't know how much you guys got involved with it, but the one thing you probably saw is Sony. Sony has a car.
It was really interesting because that Sony looked absolutely. I mean, it looked production ready, right?
My point was just like, this wasn't them going, hey, big announcement, we're going to launch an electric car division. We're going to see you in 7 years. They're like, no, it's done. It's here. It works.
It was an interesting thing because it was it was designed to display the in-car technology and all the immersive sound and all that sort of thing. But yeah, you looked at that and you thought, well, kind of makes sense, Sony doing a car in a way, in that you think about all their mastery of electronics. Mm-hmm. And it's a really – there's some really interesting stuff coming out of Volkswagen, and a lot of people are talking about Tesla's share price. And, you know, Tesla, I think this morning I was driving in and saw Tesla is now the second most valuable car company in the world.
It passed the $100 billion or something.
Yeah, which
Trump called them out and said something nice.
Which it's kind of –
you know, he's one of his compliments. He was like, they were like, what about Elon Musk? He's like, he's good at the rocket building. And then all of a sudden, Tesla stock jumps. I don't know.
It's one of those things where comment. I'm not an analyst, and you and I work in the car world. So at one level, it sounds nuts. And then I was reading some commentary from Volkswagen's CEO, Herbert Diess, a guy I've met a few times, and fascinating. And he was basically saying, look, the old world of the car manufacturer is kind of over. And now it's all about, you know, how you apply technology and how this car interfaces. This is basically a cell phone on the move. And there was a lot of comparisons with Nokia when the iPhone came out.
Yeah.
The iPhone comes out and Nokia had like 30 different phones for 30 different, you know, for all these different user groups.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple just came out and said, this is what you need.
Yeah.
And there's a, you know, and suddenly within, 5 years, Nokia was pretty much dead.
Yeah. I think Microsoft bought them and then gone.
Yeah, that probably wasn't the best acquisition. I don't know. Maybe it's one of these where in the background all the patents are actually really making billions. But it's a really interesting world. And I actually, at the weekend, I was out shopping for a new car for my wife. Mm-hmm. And our BMW i3 is going back. She commutes in Southern California, wants carpool lane access. That means a plug-in hybrid or electric.
Can we still get that pass?
The carpool, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like for the electric car, can you get it?
You need an EV or a plug-in hybrid.
But not like a Prius, like a new Prius.
No, if it's a plug-in, it's okay. If it's not.
Okay.
I know for people listening, this is very local news. But but it was just interesting looking at the market because BMW is coming in with a plug-in. Audi's Q5 plug-ins just arrived. But these things are doing like 20 miles on electricity. So really, you look at the market and for a reasonable price, still pretty expensive, but for like a $40,000 or, you know, $400 on a lease, the Tesla's kind of the only choice around that market. Yes, you've got the Kias but and the Hyundais, but they're smaller. You know, you understand why they're doing so well in the market. And I might end up leasing a Tesla.
Okay, all right.
But
well,
my other half is yet to be fully convinced. But I'm nearly there.
I've got more carpool questions.
Okay.
Okay. As far as you know, it has to be a plug-in hybrid or full electric, not a regular hybrid.
Correct.
It can't be
a used car because if the person who previously owned it had carpool stickers, you can't get carpool stickers again. Because my thought was I get a used car.
And it's not transferable?
It's not transferable. Okay. It goes with the person, not the car.
Is there a minimum range on that car? Because we've talked about a lot of these plug-in hybrids and I'm trying to find out the strategy behind it. What if I get a Range Rover plug-in hybrid or Aviator or Volvo?
That's where it's a nonsense. So yes, all those cars, there's a list online and all those cars qualify.
Okay, because I was trying to figure out the point of the plug-in hybrid SUV that gets
the Range Rover
that gets 13 miles on a charge.
And you're lugging around the extra motor, the extra battery. So you're lugging around it. We've just been talking about
and
the whole point of that
is basically just to get in the carpool lane by yourself.
Yes.
Yes.
In your massive $100,000 Range Rover.
Yes. And you would never plug it in and nobody would care.
No.
And you would just haul batteries around. And in exchange for that, you get to get in the carpool lane by yourself.
And feel really smug and self-righteous. In the Netherlands, in Europe, they massively incentivize this stuff. And then there was some great statistic came up about how many people actually plugged them in.
Yeah. Zero.
Yeah.
Zero. Is it close to zero?
Pretty much.
It's basically zero, right? Okay. You guys at Edmunds took your Model 3, you traded it, and got a Model 3.
Yeah, this is a story that we've got coming out.
What can you tell us about it now?
I think we actually said we weren't going to talk about it until the next show, but we'll get into it now then.
No, we'll just tease it a little bit so we can find out so we can go it's edmunds.com/roadnoise, by the way. It's a great place to get sort of the up-to-date news on all of this stuff.
It is. Yeah, we had this idea. We had a Tesla from early 2017 that we bought new. And the residuals on things, partly because you trade them back to – most of the time you're trading them back to Tesla. The residuals on these are still strong. And we've been talking a lot about this mythical $35,000. You okay there?
Yeah. Dying. I'm drinking water and it's going down the wrong tubes.
We were talking about this mythic. Everybody's talking about this mythical $35,000 Tesla. So we were like, right, can we actually get one? And if we can, why don't we trade our 2017 car against it?
Well, how much was the 2017 car?
So 2017 car started out being worth $38,000 because it was a, I forget exactly what we paid for, but today with 20-something thousand miles on the clock, still worth $38,000. So we then started to look at this 35, and you can basically, it's like In-N-Out Burger. So you can ring up Tesla and say, I want this $35,000, and they go, sir. And, yeah. But actually, you can make it, and then you can basically almost do like In-N-Out, where you're like, I want the barbecue sauce, but can you throw an extra bit of, you know, bit of onion on that? So we ended up with an absolutely base car, which is white, doesn't have autopilot. But
good.
But beyond that,
safest thing you've done.
But beyond that, is pretty much a Tesla. Yeah. Well, it is a Tesla. The range comes down a little bit, to from 250, I think, to 210. But basically, it's there. And I think by the time you put all the destination, everything in, it works out around 40. But we've paid, we lost the at the end of last year as a change in the federal tax, which costs a bit more. But essentially, we paid about 4K, and we now have a brand new Model 3. And what we wanted to do was to understand how they've progressed in the production and everything else. And we wanted to tell the story of, can you actually buy the $35,000 Tesla, and what does that look like?
Because
you can't find it on the website. You have to go and speak to them.
Right, you have to call them
and say, we documented the whole thing. It's like, can you actually get this?
Yeah.
And the reality is, to be fair to them, yes, you can. I'm sure they don't want to sell it. And it was delayed and delayed, and we missed at Christmas, as Christmas passed and 1st of January passed, we missed this like tax credit. So I added an extra $1,800 and then refused to discount that. So it's not been a perfect process.
Yeah.
But we have ended up with a new car. Originally, it was supposed to be black, like the old Henry Ford thing. Then it turned out to be white because presumably...
because black costs extra.
Maybe white is cheaper paint, or maybe they just had more white sitting around in Palo Alto. But anyway, the upshot is we have a new Tesla, and we're going to produce a film about the whole process and how it came about. But it's a good story. It's a great story.
Okay, well, I like it. Did you guys order yourself the Ford Mach-E as well?
The Mach-E is, I went, as you know, I went and had a look at that in Detroit, that's actually been selling pretty well. We would like, you know,
well, they said that first allocation of like reserves is sold out.
Yeah.
Now there wasn't
They're not actually making that many. I think they've got certain supply issues with around the batteries and that kind of thing. So that's why you can't lease one, for example. They're just basically saying, well, if we're not going to build many and we're going to sell them all, we might as well make some money. That of all the cars that I'm excited about this year, that's totally on the list.
Yeah. I liked it. I thought it looked kind of cool. I mean, I don't care if it's called a Mustang or not. I'm just looking at it for what it is, and as an electric car from Ford. And
honestly, a good garage would be a GD500 and a Mustang EV.
And
you know, a little bit, people probably writing in and saying, oh, well, you know, it's not a Mustang, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That's just a nice garage to have.
Yeah, that is a nice garage to have. Let me tell you guys about Geico. Let me ask you this. Do you own a home? Do you rent a home?
I both. Yep. I own a home in London, which I rent out, and I have to rent here.
Well, I bet it's a lot of work.
It is. It's falling down in London, but it's a whole different story.
All right. Well, you know what's easy? It's bundling policies with Geico. You should get some insurance.
Geico
makes it. Yeah, I don't know. We'll find out. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing because we already have a lot to do around the home already. And now you're shuffling a baby around, so you don't want to worry about your home. You're going to worry about your baby instead. So go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Is that the one with the little, is it a frog or a little?
The lizard.
Lizard, sorry. Yeah. Not a frog.
It's a gecko.
It's a gecko.
It's a gecko. Geico, gecko.
Yeah. It's a gecko.
Like Gordon Gecko.
Yeah. There you go, Gordon Gecko.
It's like Gordon Gecko. Gordon Gecko, the Geico investor. All right, what else is new at Edmunds? Are you guys kicking off for this year? You must have a lot on the menu for 2020.
We have. I mean, we're just looking forward now. I mean, we sort of go into show season. Geneva's coming up. Then
when is that?
We're going to New York. Geneva's beginning of March. Then we go into New York. I mean, there's a ton of stuff happening, and we're just sort of ramping up. I mean, if you think about the next week, we've got a GLB test with little Mercedes SUV, which you're a big fan of, coming out. We're doing a... we've got a new Telluride on the fleet, Kia Telluride, which we're big fans of. Corvette arrives before too long, so there's a lot there's a lot going on.
Telluride.
We're driving the new Boxster with the six cylinder.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. The Telluride is the Kia SUV that you guys like, but now there's an upscale Genesis version coming out.
The GV80. Yeah.
What are you expecting for that? Are you expecting it's going to be too much, or are you expecting a nicer sort of, you know, Explorer versus Lincoln Navigator, Aviator comparison?
Yeah, I mean, generally Genesis, and they have – the guy behind the styling is a guy called Luke Donkavolka, who did the Lamborghinis and his ex-Volkswagen group, which is also a fantastic name. And Genesis generally – I think it's starting to do a good job. Their interiors are great. Their quality is good. They desperately needed an SUV. But of all the luxury brands that are kind of in that sort of world where they're not, you know, established European brand, or they're not a Cadillac, but they're trying to make their way through, like Infiniti, that they seem to be the guys on the roll at the moment. They desperately needed an SUV. But this could be an interesting thing. We might be having a look at it next week in Miami, and then obviously driving it before too long. Another SUV that I'm super excited about. I'm off to it's a bit look at me this, so forgive me, but I'm off to Namibia in about 3 weeks' time to go and drive the Land Rover Defender.
Oh, nice!
So that will be super exciting.
Your gig isn't so bad.
No, it's not. I'm flying Air Namibia as well into Frankfurt, which looked quite entertaining when I looked at the website. But
yeah, so you're gonna leave the wife home with the baby.
I'm her mum's coming out. To okay, help. Yeah. So that was the deal.
Yeah,
is my mum come out? Yeah. Okay, and then no, I mean that will be a hugely interesting car.
How do you make that call, by the way? Hey, mom, want to come out to visit? Yeah, I'd love to. Come see the baby. It'll be fun. Yeah. Also, I'm not going to be there, so enjoy.
Yeah, those conversations go either way, can't they?
Enjoy that.
It's nice.
A bit
of mother-daughter, granddaughter time.
Yeah.
It's good.
Right. Before we wrap it up, tell us about what's going on with Porsche and the Boxster and the Cayman. They don't really call it Boxster and Cayman anymore, do they?
Well, they do. They 718, Boxster 718. I think everybody ignores the 718 bit.
We had turbo fours in those for the longest time, except for the GT4, the Cayman GT4, which I liked. I think it maybe rode a little rough, but a great performer, and it looked kind of badass. And in my book, a great $100,000 sports car if you could have bought it for a sticker.
Yeah. Yeah, I love those things. They're very much and the Boxster Spider as well, which is basically the same car without a roof, or similar car. Yeah, so there's been all this controversy around Porsche, and I did the original 718 Boxster launch in Europe before I moved to the US. And the problem with those cars, they're all about that kind of visceral experience. And that four-cylinder turbo engine, they had all sorts of plumbing issues as well, so they were struggling. The 911 with the turbos, they go to a great length to make sure it sounds good.
Yeah.
One of the challenges with the Boxster is they just didn't have the physical space to do some of the tricks. So that was an issue, and it just really compromised that car to the point where I just said, well, I'll just buy the previous generation one and get a used one. I wouldn't actually want this car. And unfortunately for them, I think that's been the general consensus of opinion. And when you look at Porsche's sales figures, you know, Porsche now sells more, you know, it is a Cayenne and a Macan brand, and actually the 911 is almost like the halo car, the image leader. And then, you know, Caymans and Boxsters are fairly small numbers. But Porsche has listened, and people have come out there and just said, we want the old six-cylinder back. But what they've done is reintroduce it in the GTS. And the problem is it's $90,000.
Yeah.
I mean, that's nearly as much as a base model Carrera. And, you know, you think of a Boxster as being reasonably accessible. For me, $90,000 is not accessible. I'm sure it's going to be great, and we're driving it in Europe in about 3 weeks' time, I think, alongside the new Macan GTS, which I'm also sure will be a cool thing. But that's such a lot of money.
Yeah.
Plus options, inevitably.
How much horsepower do you think it's going to make?
It's got about 400. So it's not. It's going to be a nice thing.
Yeah.
And actually, if you wait 3 or 4 years, it's probably going to be an amazing second-hand buy.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. All right, we're going to wrap things up, but I'm curious why the move in just the GTS. Is it because they have so much invested in the four-cylinder and the current platform, or they don't want to sort of dilute the value of that platform by doing it across the board? Instead, they make sort of a limited version or special edition?
Well, they had a GTS, the four-cylinder, which I believe they're not continuing with. So if you bought one of those, you're going to be super upset.
Yeah. I don't know. A lot of those guys are going to trade it and get the new one anyway.
Maybe, but Yeah, but the Boxster customer, the Boxster and Cayman customer is not necessarily, you know, there's a lot of people stretching to buy those cars. It's, you know, the 911 yeah. customer is quite different. I think you're probably right. I think it's a cost issue. It'll be an emissions issue as well. That's particularly important in Europe.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that was what was driving it in the first place. It was emissions and fuel economy and everything else that goes with it. So this is the problem for the industry right now. Everybody, we're talking about cars getting bigger and faster and heavier. Everybody wants that. But at the same time, all the rules and regulations are saying, guys, you've got to, you know, particularly in Europe, I mean, Trump's a bit of a different story over here, but everybody's saying you've got to have plug-in hybrids, you've got to get lighter, smaller, more efficient. So Porsche puts a four-cylinder turbo into it, which has the same performance, but has more fuel economy and lower emissions. And everybody goes,
yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate you coming in. He's Alistair Waver from Edmunds.com. Go to Edmunds.com/roadnoise and check out the three-way muscle car drag race. And there's going to be the more extended video and the articles and
on
stuff
Thursday. So yeah, I think actually yeah. as this show goes live, that video will be live. So.
All right. So as you're listening to this, that'll probably be up there. You guys can check that out.
So this is a 40 minutes. That's the half hour epic.
All right.
So sit down in front of TV, beer, wine.
There you go. Yeah, on your phone while you're sitting in traffic. check us out at carcastshow.com. Of course, tell a friend. We love a little shout-out on social media. Tell them you listen to the show. You like the episodes with Alistair Weaver. That's what you tell them. Tell everyone. And you can follow us on social media. I am at Motorator on pretty much everything. And our buddy Goldberg will be back, and I'm sure he'll be curious to find out about the testing you've been doing on his beloved Red Eye versus the GT500 and the Camaro.
I sent him a tweet about it, and he gave me a little thumbs up, but that was about it. Yeah, it wasn't really biting.
Yeah, that's about it. He's Goldberg95 and Goldberg's Garage on Instagram. You can follow Alistair Weaver on Twitter, and you can find Weavometer on Instagram. Follow him. He needs a few more. Go follow him on Instagram. You need a few more.
I need some friends.
You need some Insta friends.
I need some real
IG friends. You need to get up there and not just baby pics and stuff that's probably all over your Facebook page now and hitting up from family and everything. Going, oh, show me pictures of the baby. Show me pictures of the baby. Yeah. Some car guys. Get some car guys and girls up over at Wivon.
The Instagram is basically car stuff.
Yeah, there you go.
With the odd baby. Baby in a car occasionally, but mainly car stuff.
Occasionally. All right. We're going to wrap things up. And until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Carcast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on carcastshow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. Carcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.